proceed to the fourth case, Sanco versus Mukasey. Ms. Schwartz.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm counsel for petitioner Saidu Sanco. Mr. Sanco is a citizen of Sierra Leone who was placed in removal in 1997 when he overstayed his visitor's visa. He requested asylum and withholding of removal as well as relief under the Convention Against Torture, all of which were denied by Immigration Judge Zerbe in the Chicago Asylum Court following a hearing in 2005. Mr. Sanco appealed to the BIA and in a single-judge opinion, his order of removal was affirmed and for the most part relying on the IJ's reasoning. Mr. Sanco basically has two different claims for asylum or protection. His first claim is that he was a victim of past persecution in early 1994 at the hands of the Revolutionary United Front, a rebel group then at that time dedicated to the overthrow of the current regime, and which later became internationally infamous for its abuse of the civilian population in Sierra Leone. The leader of the RUF was Mr. Sanko's uncle, Fode Sanko. And Fode, in 1992, went to Saidu Sanko and asked him for his assistance. Mr. Sanko refused. The next time, Mr. Fode assaulted Mr. Sanko, threatened him and his family, and he decided to acquiesce. His activities consisted of taking 7 or 8 trips to Europe with some European men who were working for the RUF for the purpose of purchasing supplies for the organization.
Guns.
Probably guns. And guns and other things as well. In early 1994, when the RUF no longer had a need for his assistance, he was impressed into being a pack animal and carrying supplies into the rebel camps in the bush. In the last one of those two trips, he was scalded with hot water and gang raped before he managed to escape back to Freetown and left immediately for West Germany, where he had previously been a permanent resident. Mr. Sanko believes that he remains at risk from the remaining vestiges of the RUF. He also fears persecution from the government of Sierra Leone, which the record reflects has imputed to him a political opinion in support of the RUF because of his relationship to his uncle Fode and their cousin, a gentleman named Musa Kabia, who was necklaced in the streets by government agents as a suspected RUF sympathizer. There's evidence in the record that the government continued to look for Mr. Sanko to at least until 2000, and that country conditions reflect that many low-level suspected RUF supporters continue to languish in jails in Sierra Leone under terrible conditions and without the benefit of trial. Mr. Sanko's claims can be classified into three categories. The first category relates to the conduct of the hearing. And the primary objection that Mr. Sanko has to the way that the immigration judge conducted the hearing is that the judge essentially commandeered the role of prosecutor, took over the hearing, and attempted to cross-examine Mr. Sanko at great length in order to ferret out what he would later, when he's the adjudicator, characterized as inconsistencies in the record. This conduct then infected his credibility findings, in which he found that Mr. Sanko was not credible when he made claims that he was coerced into cooperation and that he was later abused by the RUF. Then the findings of non-credibility infect all of the third category of claims, which are the substantive claims. Now, I would like to focus today on one of those substantive claims, and that is the finding that Mr. Sanko was a persecutor of others and thus barred from relief completely for either asylum or withholding of removal. The evidence that he was a that he assisted the RUF consisted of the evidence that he went on these trips, that the reason that he was needed was that he was a resident of Germany and as a member of the European community had free access without the necessity of a visa to go to countries in Europe, and as a Sierra Leone citizen and well-known businessman who had done trade over the years, could then bring supplies back, claim them at the airport when he returned or at the port if they were sent by boat, without significant review surveillance by the authorities in Sierra Leone at the port. This was a unique position he was in, and Mr. Senko testified that the other reason that he was impressed to do this was that if he got caught, he would take the fall instead of people in the RUF.
I find it a little hard to believe that he couldn't extricate himself from this situation on any one of these many trips to Europe to participate in these
acquisition. He might have been, but he didn't. And the fact that he didn't do it, whether he's a coward, whether he was afraid, whether he thought it would be useless, whether somebody else would have done it, we don't know that. But the fact that he didn't do it doesn't really undermine his claim that what he did in no way consisted of persecution of others. If you want to accept that he wasn't forcibly coerced, even if you want to accept that he was told what was in the shipments, which was this other issue that was a big deal at the hearing, it doesn't matter. He was not a persecutor of others. The findings of credibility...
Well, if you're arming in a... somebody's involved in arming an insurgent group, and I understand a little bit of what went on in Sierra Leone. Not very much, but there's a great book about it.
Right, that's right. He may have been responsible for some things, but he wasn't a persecutor. That is a highly technical term, and it requires some evidence that he assisted or otherwise participated in the actual persecution of identifiable persons for persecutory reasons.
If you bring guns into the Gaza Strip and give them to Hamas, are you assisting terrorism?
Not in the absence of any evidence of some actual harm to individuals based on persecutory reasons. In Fedorenko, the Supreme Court talks about this. You know, there's the person who cuts the hair of the individual on the way to the gas chamber, and then there's the person who actually turns on the gas, and every other case falls in this range in between. Well, Mr. Senko was the person who bought the scissors for the person who cut the hair. He doesn't even come into a specific act of persecution, and we're not talking about...
But those guns weren't used in personal maintenance or hygiene, were they?
No, but he's not charged with being of material assistance. He's charged with being a persecutor, and that's different. In the Doe case, this court first identified what is the act of persecution, and in that case, it was the execution of Jesuits who supported their rebellion in the civil war in El Salvador. In Gao, which is another case that I cite, which I think is the only one that's even nearly on point, and Gao was found not to be a persecutor, Gao was the one who detected and gave tickets to booksellers who were selling forbidden books. And there was no evidence that any of the people that he cited actually ended up persecuted, charged, detained, and punished. All that happened to the guys that he cited, they got fined, and they lost their licenses. And the Second Circuit in that case said, there's no evidence that anything that he did actually led to the actual persecution, not of hypothetical people, but of actual persons. My time is up, so.
Thank you, Ms. Schwartz. Mr. Rabin?
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the Court. Arthur Rabin here on behalf of the Attorney General, the respondent in this case. Just to cover the same issues that Petitioner's Counsel did, I want to first turn to the alleged cross-examination. Well, the immigration judge is permitted to conduct cross-examination pursuant to regulation. And the actual circumstance of how it actually happened in this case is that Petitioner had a hearing. His counsel was permitted to do direct examination. DHS counsel was permitted to do cross-examination. And then the immigration judge turned to Petitioner's counsel and said, are you finished? She said, yes. And then he made follow-up questions. And all these follow-up questions led to seeking the same, they covering pretty much the same exact ground that the petitioner testified during direct and cross. So this was not like the immigration judge was covering new territory. He just tried to clarify aspects of the case that he thought were pertinent, and by regulation and as well as statute, cited in our the response brief, he's permitted to do that. Turning next to the persecutor issue. Now, in this particular case, what this gentleman did, admittedly, because despite the fact that he did attempt to minimize his involvement during his testimony by first testifying that he was requested to import something, that he didn't really know what it was. In his initial asylum declaration, he specifically stated that when he was recruited, he was told from day one that it was going to be guns, it was going to be arms. And then throughout his testimony, he inadvertently does allow himself to slip and say, yes, it was arms. Yes, it was ammunition. Yes, I did see a label that said rifle on it one time. What did this gentleman do? Well, on 7 to 8 occasions, he traveled to West Germany in support of the RUF because the gentleman that accompanied him was a RUF agent. They purchased arms. They traveled back to Sierra Leone from whether it was West Germany at that point, well, it was Germany at that point, as well as Amsterdam, a couple of Romania, and some other places. He then waited until the arms shipment arrived, went to the customs office, got these things out of customs, and then on at least 2 occasions transported these weapons, guns, ammo, and may as well be other supplies too, into the jungle hideouts of the rebels, the RUF rebels, the Revolutionary United Front. So to say that his case is like that of a person who merely cuts the hair and that he just provides the scissors is inaccurate because he put guns, not scissors, in the hands of the killers. And it does not take a stretch of the imaginations to say that these people who he admitted he knew at the time he gave them these guns were actually persecuting people. He admitted that he knew that they were out there fighting the government, that he knew that they were bad people, that he was afraid of them. It does not take a stretch of the imagination to think what what these people would do with these guns that he provided them. So I think his case fits perfectly within the realm of the statutory definition of assisted. Just like in the Singh case, where this court held that a gentleman named Singh, who was a police officer, who accompanied several times and witnessed several times acts of violence against fellow Sikhs, In that particular case, the court said it gave various factors to consider. And what it considered was that Singh was aware of the persecutory acts. His acts did amount to assistance. That his acts were repetitive and over an extended period of time. And he didn't really quit his job when he had the chance. And as Your Honor pointed out, that in this particular case, Mr. Sanko had plenty of opportunity to quit this enterprise. On any one of those 7 to 8 trips, he could have approached a German immigration officer, a police officer, a hotel manager, somebody to assist him into getting away from these people. Yet he never did. Over at least a 2-year period of time, he made numerous trips, obtained these weapons, and gave them to the rough, knowing about their persecutory acts inside his own country. Now, in Doe, on the other hand, which counsel mentioned, that particular case is inapropos, because there were no acts of assistance. And what the court wrestled with in that case was, is mere presence sufficient to amount to assistance? That is, a gentleman who, in Doe, was just present at these acts of persecution, but did nothing himself, and nothing that assisted the persecution, was mere presence enough. And the court in that case decided no. That's a far cry from what happened in this case. This case is more akin to Singh. Now, the only other issue I want to touch on are some of the credibility findings in this case, because we never even have to get to the issue of whether or not this gentleman was a persecutor if this court finds that substantial credible evidence supports the board's and immigration judges' credibility findings. And in this particular case, I would submit that the court, the board, and the immigration judge gave sufficient specific cogent reasons to support that credibility finding, including inconsistencies and plausibilities. The major inconsistency here was that this gentleman testified and told the immigration judge he did not know he was shipping arms back to Sierra Leone. That's on page 269. And said he was told he was shipping back secondhand tires, page 269, 270. Yet, in his initial declaration, he specifically said that when he was recruited, he was told, or his uncle, Mr. Sanko, Fode Sanko, told him that he would be shipping back arms and buying ammunition. And they also disclosed a location of their secret hideouts and things like that to him at the time he was recruited. So now we have this major inconsistency as to whether or not he was a mere patsy, an unknowing person who was assisting these people, or actually somebody that was related to the leader, that had a West German passport, and that did go to West Germany and other places and smuggle arms on behalf of the Revolutionary United Front. Also, a couple other inconsistencies that went directly to the heart of his claim. The circumstances of this alleged gang rape. Well, he said hot water was thrown on him during the rape, and that's on page 204 and 279. But then he later said hot water was thrown on him during an escape attempt. That's 439. The number of the rapists. He initially said, he testified it was 4 rebels that raped him, page 205. But in his written statement, he said it was 6 rebels that were involved in the rape, page 439. He was even off by years.
That's hardly an inconsistency. Yeah, they are gang raped by 4 or 6.
Your Honor, I'm just pointing out what the board found, and the evidence in the record supports the inconsistency. Even the things like the date, he was off by 2 years. He initially said he was raped in 1992, and then he later said he was raped in January of 1994, by 2 whole years. And even the length of his trips for the rough. He initially said his trips lasted 2 to 6 weeks, page 437, but then testified it was only 1.5 weeks. page 235. There were also numerous implausibilities. The implausibilities are this. Here's the key one. Here's a man that is politically connected because his family is obviously his uncle. One of his uncles was a minister. His cousin was a minister. His other uncle is the leader of the Revolutionary United Front, who he is helping. He is an integral part to their smuggling scheme. So not only is he related to the leader of the Revolutionary United Front, but he is a key part of their arms smuggling. Yet he wants us to believe that somehow the rebels took him in the jungle and raped him, burned him with scalding water, and raped him. Neither the board or the immigration judge found that to be plausible. There was also insufficient corroboration of his claim. He presented two things, medical evidence and two letters, one from a guy named Mr. Caroma and a Dr. Conley. I see I'm out of time. If I could just
you
quickly
conclude that thought. Sure.
Thank you, Your Honor. The medical evidence, none of it was ever linked up to his alleged injuries. None of it. He could have readily gone to any doctor and said, can you express an opinion that my hernia could have been caused by a rape, that these scalding marks could have been, or these injuries on my back could have been caused by scalding water. He never did that. And the two letters that he provided were never authenticated, were never shown to have originated from Sierra Leone. So there isn't absolutely no way to tell how these letters got there. And the circumstance of their creation was also suspect, because the judge noted the signatures looked identical on both documents, even though they were supposedly signed by two different people. And lastly, the circumstance how they're created is supposedly Mr. Caroma, who held petitioner prisoner, just happened to be in the doctor's office of Dr. Kanu, who was a friend of petitioner's. Mr. Caroma saw petitioner's picture on the wall and recognized him and said, oh, I held that guy prisoner in the jungle. I know all about it. How can I help? That's just implausible. Subject to the court's questions?
Apparently not. Thank you, Mr. Raven.
Thank you.
Ms. Schwartz, your time had expired, but you may have 2 minutes for rebuttal.
I couldn't possibly address everything, and I think all the issues are adequately addressed in the brief, except this persecutor issue, and I do want to address the questions from the court. Singh, which Mr. Raven cites, is not on point. Mr. Singh knowingly accompanied Sikhs to interrogations where he knew they were going to be tortured. He then stood guard to prevent their escape. And this court said, even though he didn't actually participate in the torture, he clearly assisted or otherwise participated. This case is different, and I do commend the Gao case because it's the only thing that comes even close. There has never been a case where a court has found that one is a persecutor of others where they obtained goods that were later used in some different place at some different time, maybe to persecute others. The government in this case never took the position that Mr. Sanko was a persecutor. They never offered any evidence that he was a persecutor. The idea that he was a persecutor was the IJ's alone. And he and the BIA, whatever we say about the way the hearing was conducted or about how the findings of credibility were, the fundamental analysis is flawed. And there's never been a court that has found persecution under facts similar to this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schwartz. Thanks, Ms. Raven. The case is taken under advisement.